page 184. Soon then, from out of the mist, the horsemen emerged, black shapes with raised torches, black steeds hissing and charging, and the battle was joined. Immediately the night air filled with dreadful screams and cries of agony, for the first charge of horsemen had struck the trench, and many mounts tumbled and fell, spilling their riders, and the torches sputtered in the water. Other horses tried to leap the fence to be impaled on the sharp stakes. A section of the fence caught fire. Warriors ran in all directions. Now I saw one of the horsemen ride through the burning section of fence, and I could see this Wendall clearly for the first time, and verily I saw this. On a black steed rode a human figure in black, but his head was the head of a bear. I was startled with a time of most horrible fright, and I feared I should die from fear alone, for never had I witnessed such a nightmare vision. Yet at the same moment the hand-axe of Ecgtheow was buried deep into the back of the rider, who toppled and fell, and the bear's head rolled from his body, and I saw that he had beneath the head of a man. Quick as a lightning bolt, Ecgtheow leaped upon the fallen creature, stabbed deep into the chest, turned the corpse, and withdrew his hand-axe from the back, and ran to join the battle. Page 185. I also joined the battle, for I was knocked spinning from my feet by the blow of a lance. Many riders were now within the fence, their torches blazing. Some had the heads of bears, and some did not. They circled and tried to set the buildings and the hall of Hurot afire. Against this, Bullywith and his men battled valiantly. I came to my feet just as one of the mist monsters bore down upon me with charging steed. Verily, I did this. I stood firm my ground and held my lance upward, and the impact I thought would rend me. Yet the lance passed through the body of the rider, and he screamed most horribly, but he did not fall from his mount and rode on. I fell gasping with pain in my stomach, but I was not truly injured save for the moment. During the time of this battle, Hergr and Skeld loosed their many arrows, and the air was filled with their whistles, and they reached many marks. I saw the arrow of Skeld pass through the neck of one rider and lodge there. Yet again I saw Skeld and Hergr both pierce a rider in the chest, and so quickly did they unsheath and draw again that this same rider soon bore four shafts buried in his body, and his screaming was most dreadful as he rode. Page 186. Yet I learned this deed was accounted poor fighting by Hergr and Skeld, for the Northmen believe that there is nothing sacred in animals, so to them the proper use of arrows is the killing of horses to dislodge the rider. They say of this, a man off his horse is half a man and twice killable. Thus they proceed with no hesitations. Footnote 3. Now I also saw this. A rider swept into the compound, bent low on his galloping black horse, and he caught up the body of the monster Ecgtheow had slain, swung it over his horse's neck, and rode off. For, as I have said, these mist monsters leave no dead to be found in the morning light. The battle raged on a goodly period of time by the light of the blazing fire through the mist. I saw Hergr in mortal combat with one of the demons. Taking up a fresh lance, I drove it deep into the creature's back. Footnote 3. According to divine law, Muslims believe that the messenger of God has forbidden cruelty to animals. This extends to such mundane details as the commandment to unload pack animals promptly so that they will not be unnecessarily burdened. Furthermore, the Arabs have always taken a special delight in breeding and training horses. The Scandinavians had no special feeling toward animals. Nearly all Arab observers commented on their lack of affection for horses. Return to text. Page 187. Hergr, dripping blood, raised an arm in thanks and plunged back into the combat. Here I felt great pride. Now I tried to withdraw my lance, and whilst so doing was knocked aside by some passing horseman, and from that time, in truth, I remember little. I saw that one of the dwellings of the nobles of Hrothgar was burning in licking, spitting flame, but that the doused hall of Hurot was still untouched, and I was glad as if I were myself a Northman, and such were my final thoughts. Upon the dawn I was roused by some manner of bathing upon the flesh of my face, and was pleased for the gentle touch. Soon then I saw that I received the ministrations of a licking dog, and felt much the drunken fool, and was mortified, as may be imagined. Footnote 4. Most early translators of Ibn Fadlan's manuscript were Christians with no knowledge of Arabic culture, and their interpretation of this passage reflects that ignorance. In a very free translation, the Italian La Cala, 1847, says, "In the morning I arose from my drunken stupor like a common dog, and was much ashamed for my condition." And Skovmand, in his 1919 commentary, brusquely concludes that one cannot place credence in Ibn Fadlan's stories, for he was drunk during the battles and admits as much. More charitably, Du Chatelier, a confirmed Vikingophile, said in 1908, "The Arabs soon acquired the intoxication of the battle that is the very essence of the Norse heroic spirit." I am indebted to Masoud Farzan, the Sufi scholar, for explaining the allusion that Ibn Fadlan is making here. Actually, he is comparing himself to a character in a very old Arabic joke. A drunken man falls into a puddle of his own vomit by the roadside. A dog comes along and begins licking his face. The drunk assumes a kind person is cleaning his face and says gratefully, "May Allah make your children obedient." Then the dog raises his leg and urinates on the drunkard, who responds, "And may God bless you, brother, for having brought warm water to wash my face." In Arabic, the joke carries the usual injunction against drunkenness and the subtle reminder that liquor is khamer, or filth, as is urine. Ibn Fadlan probably expected his reader to think not that he was ever drunk, but rather that he luckily avoided being urinated upon by the dog, as he earlier escaped death in battle. It is a reference, in other words, to another near miss. Return to text. Page 188. "Now I saw that I lay in the ditch where the water was red as blood itself. I arose and walked through the smoking compound, past all manner of death and destruction. I saw that the earth was soaked in blood as from a rain, with many puddles. I saw the bodies of slain nobles and dead women and children likewise. So also I saw three or four whose bodies were charred and crusted from fire. All these bodies lay everywhere upon the ground, and I was obliged to cast my eyes downward lest I step upon them, so thickly were they spread." Page 189. Of the defense works, much of the pole fence had been burned away. Upon other sections, horses lay impaled and cold. Torches were scattered here and there. I saw none of the warriors of Buliwith. No cries or mourning came from the kingdom of Hrothgar, for the North people do not lament any death, but on the contrary, there was an unusual stillness in the air. I heard the crowing of a cock and the bark of a dog, but no human voices in the daylight. Then I entered the great hall of Herat, and here found two bodies laid upon the rushes with their helmets upon their chests. There was Skeld, an earl of Buliwith. There was Healfdene, earlier injured and now cold and pale. Both were dead. Also there was Rethel, youngest of the warriors, who sat upright in a corner and was attended by slave women. Rethel had been wounded previously, but he had a fresh injury in his stomach, and there was much blood. Surely it pained him greatly, and yet he showed only cheer, and he smiled and teased the slave women by the practice of pinching their breasts and buttocks, and often they chided him for causing their distraction as they attempted to bind his wounds. Here is the manner of the treatment of wounds according to their nature. Page 190. If a warrior be wounded in the extremity, either the arm or the leg, a ligature is tied about the extremity, and cloths boiled in water placed over the wound to cover it. Also, I was told that spider webs or bits of lamb's wool may be placed into the wound to thicken the blood and stop its flow. This I never observed. If a warrior be wounded in the head or the neck, his injury is bathed clean and examined by the slave women. If the skin is rent but the white bones whole, then they say of such a wound, it is no matter. But if the bones are cracked or broken open in such fashion, then they say, his life issues out and soon escapes. If a warrior be wounded in the chest, they feel his hands and feet, and if these are warm, they say of such a wound, it is no matter. Yet if this warrior coughs or vomits blood, they say, he speaks in blood, and count this most serious. A man may die of the blood-speaking illness, or he may not, as is his fate. If a warrior is wounded in the abdomen, they feed him soup of onions and herbs. Then the women smell about his wounds, and if they smell onions, they say, he has the soup illness, and they know he shall die. Page 191. I saw with my own eyes the women prepare a soup of onion for Rethel, who drank a quantity of this, and the slave women smelled at his wound, and they smelled the odor of onion. At this Rethel laughed and made some manner of hearty joke and called for mead, which was brought him, and he showed no trace of any care. Now Bulliwith, the leader, and all his warriors conferred in another place in the great hall. I joined their company, but was accorded no greeting. Herger, whose life I had saved, made no notice of me, for the warriors were deep in solemn conversation. I had learned some of the Norse speech, but not sufficient to follow their low and quickly spoken words, and so I walked to another place and drank some mead and felt the aches of my body. Then a slave woman came to bathe my wounds. These were a cut in the calf and another on my chest. These injuries I had been insensible to until the time she made offer of her ministrations. The Northmen bathe wounds with ocean seawater, believing this water to possess more curative powers than spring water. Such bathing with seawater is not agreeable to the wound. In truth, I groaned, and at this Rethel laughed and spoke to a slave woman. He is still an Arab. Here I was ashamed. Page 192. Also the Northmen will bathe wounds in the heated urine of cows. This I refused when it was offered me. The North people think cow urine an admirable substance and store it up in wooden containers. In the ordinary way of things, they boil it until it is dense and stinging to the nostrils, and then employ this vile liquid for washing, especially of coarse white garments. Footnote 5. Also I was told that, upon one time or another, the North people may be engaged in a long sea voyage and have at hand no supplies of fresh water, and therefore each man drinks his own urine, and in this way they can survive until they reach shore. This I was told but never saw, by the grace of Allah. Now Herger came to me, for the conference of the warriors was at an end. The slave woman attending me had made my wounds burn most distractingly, yet I was determined to maintain a Northman show of great cheer. I said to Herger, "What trifling matter shall we undertake next?" Herger looked to my wounds and said to me, "You can ride well enough." Footnote 5. Urine is a source of ammonia, an excellent cleaning compound. Return to text. Page 193. I inquired where I would be riding, and in truth at once lost all my good cheer, for I had great weariness and no strength for aught but resting. Herger said, "Tonight the glowworm dragon will attack again, but we are now too weak and our numbers too few. Our defenses are burned and destroyed. The glowworm dragon will kill us all." These words he spoke calmly. I saw this and said to Herger, "Where then do we ride?" I had in mind that by reason of their heavy losses, Bulliwith and his company might be abandoning the kingdom of Hrothgar. In this I was not opposed. Herger said to me, "A wolf that lies in its lair never gets meat, or a sleeping man victory." This is a Northman proverb, and from it I took a different plan, that we were going to attack on horseback the mist monsters where they lay, in the mountains or the hills. With no great heart, I inquired of Herger when this should be, and Herger told me in the middle part of the day. Now I saw also that a child entered the hall and carried in his hand some object of stone. This was examined by Herger, and it was another of the headless stone carvings of a pregnant woman, bloated and ugly. Herger shouted an oath and dropped the stone from his trembling hands. Page 194. He called upon the slave woman, who took the stone and placed it in the fire, where the heat of the flames caused it to crack and splinter into fragments. These fragments were then thrown into the sea, or so I was informed, by Herger. I inquired what was the meaning of the carved stone, and he said to me, "That is the image of the mother of the eaters of the dead, she who presides over them and directs them in the eating." Now I saw that Bulawif, who stood in the center of the great hall, was looking up at the arm of one of the fiends, which still hung from the rafters. Then he looked down at the two bodies of his slain companions, and at the waning Rethel, and his shoulders fell, and his chin sank to his chest. And then he walked past them and out of the door, and I saw him put on his armor and take up his sword and prepare for battle anew.